BillGates.com. Now write this down, John. You should go there and learn how this program can help you become financially independent, too. Thanks, Bill. I'm going there right now. Check, please. You got this one, right, Bill? Sure, John. Don't forget, it's www.DidYouRobBillGates.com. Next time, you'll be buying me lunch. Deal.
This is the GCN Radio Network, home to hard-hitting talk radio.
Well, Dr. Stan here at the Genesis Communication Network, and coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay. And the sky is blue, the air is a little chilly, but it's a gorgeous, gorgeous afternoon. And our regularly scheduled guest just called me from Utah. He's caught in a snowstorm, and he'll be a few minutes late. His name is Joel Skousen from World Affairs Brief, certainly one of my favorite authors. And we're going to be talking this afternoon about the president's plan to solve the problem in Iraq by sending in another 20,000 soldiers. Now, as we pointed out before, back in 1991, when Daddy Bush wanted to chase Saddam's forces out of Kuwait and not invade Iraq and not take over the country, they had 695,000 troops. 695,000 troops. Why we tried to take Iraq this time, not only a move into Iraq itself, completely destroy the infrastructure of the country so there'd be no military support there, no police support, so the structure of the country would be totally destroyed. And then, of course, we did everything we could to turn the Sunnis against the Shias, the Muslims, and to incite people on both sides. And a number of these so-called bombings, remember when they blew up the Shia mosque? Why, somebody made everybody leave the Shia mosque for 6 or 8 hours beforehand, almost as if they were placing the explosives there, and then they blew up the mosque, and that got the Shias mad at the Sunnis, and then we have the Sunnis mad at the Shias, and of course they actually hung about 100 Shias right after they hung Saddam Hussein, and they just routed up a group of poor, unfortunate Shia Muslims and just hung them from lampposts all over the Sunni area of town. And you think that another 20,000 troops will increase our troop force from 140 to 160,000 is going to solve the problem over there? Do you really think that? Do you really think that we're going to convince that the Iraqi people, we call them insurgents or terrorists, are basically people who are fighting because we have occupied their land? And do you really think that we're going to convince them, we're going to turn the country over to them by placing military, American military units in every Iraqi military unit? I mean, does that seem logical to you? If you were an Iraqi and you felt that the Americans were occupying your land and intended to stay there and steal your oil, and that this whole thing was contrived and had nothing to do with the fact that Saddam Hussein was a wicked tyrant, because everybody in Iraq knew the United States government and the CIA were keeping Saddam in power, and every time the military had tried to overthrow Saddam Hussein, why the American government had intervened and protected him. And I'm talking between 1990 and the year 2000 now, or 1991 and the year 2000. I mean, everybody knew that the Americans had told the Shia Muslims in 1991 and the Kurds in the north in 1991 to rise up, that the Americans were going to come in and help them overthrow the wicked Saddam Hussein. And they really believed the Americans at that time. They believed them. And then, of course, we didn't come to their help. In fact, we controlled the airspace, and we let Saddam use his helicopter gunships with Gatling guns on them to mow down tens of thousands of Shia Muslims in the south. And, well, he didn't kill as many Kurds in the north. Who's responsible for that? I mean, if you give a criminal, you know, a machine gun, don't you bear some responsibility? And when you tell the Shias in the south to rise up, and then you let Saddam Hussein, when you control the airspace, use his helicopters, his armed helicopters, to kill tens of thousands of Shia Muslims, doesn't the American government, Daddy Bush, bear some sense of responsibility for what's happened? But you see, these people have a different worldview, because they worship a different God. And both Daddy Bush and the current president are members of a secret society. And those of you who haven't read the book, satanic crimes, and there's an excellent session part in that, going into the background of the Skull and Bone Society, and you realize that nothing is as it appears to be. We're not going to try to win the war in Iraq. We never went in to win the war in Iraq. We went there so we would have a permanent presence in the Middle East. And until you understand that, until you go to the website, newamericancentury.org, and read the writings of the Council on Foreign Relations Front Organization, Project for the New American Century. The document is called Rebuilding America's Defenses, and we quote it in my December newsletter, which you'll certainly want to get hold of. And they say we're going to have a permanent presence in the Middle East. But the trouble is they're not going to tell the American people. We'll be right back.
It's no secret. Aluminum itself adversely affects the blood-brain barrier and is capable of causing DNA damage. Research has even shown that aluminum salts used in antiperspirants have detrimental effects. So why are you still using traditional deodorant? Well, there is an alternative, and it's called NoBO. NoBO eliminates the bacterial growth, which causes odor, and does not interfere with perspiration, which is important for allowing your body to expel toxins. There are no chemicals, aluminum, preservatives, or petroleum-based ingredients in NoBO. Just natural ingredients like grapeseed oil, arrowroot powder, silica, vitamin E, tea tree oil, and geranium. NoBO's job is to destroy the bacteria that causes the odor while soothing your skin. You can use NoBO under your arms, on tough foot odors, or for athlete's foot. NoBO is guaranteed 100% or receive a full refund. Visit no-bo.com to order. That's no-bo.com. Or call 850-723-8599.
Hello, folks. This is Alex Jones introducing you to the incredible Berkey Solar Charger, your source for free solar electricity. This portable system is the size of a book when folded and small enough to fit into a briefcase, handbag, or glove compartment. The Berkey Solar Charger has been designed to power the Berkey Lights LED lamps as well as other applications such as mobile phones, radios, digital cameras, and PDAs when electricity is not available. Its multi-voltage capabilities, multiple adapters, and rechargeable batteries provide for a flexible source of auxiliary backup power. Simply place the Berkey Solar Charger in the sun, plug in your application, and you have power. Disconnect your application, the system automatically begins charging its own rechargeable batteries. Get the incredible Berkey Solar Charger for only $75 by calling New Millennium at 888-803-4438. And tell them Alex Jones sent you. That's toll-free, 888-803-4438.
The statistics are heart-wrenching. According to the CWC, of the 43 million people who have served in the major wars, from the Revolutionary War to the Gulf War, 3 million never made it home alive. Most likely, each one of us can say we either knew someone who served or know a brave soul who is currently serving our country. Now there is a unique way to pay tribute to the courageous men and women who spend their lives protecting our freedom and to those who have lost their lives doing so. Davis Products is offering high-quality, solid-cast aluminum memorial markers for your American flag. Each memorial marker is specifically designed to represent one of 15 wars. All markers include a 3/8 inch pointed and threaded aluminum rod, painted and highlighted for an appearance that is unforgettable. What better way to pay homage to our enlisted loved ones? Davis Products memorial markers are only $9 a piece and can be ordered by calling 814-827-4946. That's 814-827-4946. Or visit davis-products.com. That's davis-products.com.
This is coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. And of course we're waiting for Joel Skousen to get in out of the snowstorm there in Utah. Now, oh, we've got Joel here. Okay, Joel, picked up the story.
Well, tell me what you've covered so far, Dr.
Well,
Stan.
I simply pointed out that I didn't think the 20,000 troops were going to solve the problem over there when it took 695,000 troops just to shoo Saddam Hussein out of Kuwait back in 1991. Why would they think that 140,000 troops is going to solve the problem when we went in there and in 2003? And what do you think? Why would anybody think that an additional 20,000 troops would really solve this problem, especially when we're going to actually put our forces into the Iraqi units there, the Iraqis are going to know we have no intention of pulling out. And I simply made the point, the United States does not intend to pull out of the Middle East, but they're going to tell the American people that we're not going to have peace there until America gets out of that country.
Well, certainly there is a... They're giving the appearance of a specific plan for a specific solution, and it'll take another year for that, for the public to discover that this isn't going to work too. But the main purpose of this entire exercise, I believe, is to simply provide a plausible cover for future war preparations in the Middle East. In other words, they're using the problems in Iraq that supposedly need fixing, the continued need for success, in order to front for building up troop levels for what they intend to take on Iraq and Syria this year. You know, this, of course, was a long-awaited, media-hyped, euphemistically titled speech, The New Way Forward. It was carefully crafted by the speechwriters. You know, Bush doesn't write his own speeches. None of the presidents do. This was crafted by a very slick team of experts, although I will say that the presentation by President Bush was one of the most wooden-like recitations I've ever heard him give. Just extremely dull and boring without any expression hardly whatsoever, just reading it right off the board. It's obvious that this was a very carefully crafted speech that his advisors said, I don't want you to make any changes, don't make sure you don't miss a word. It's very, very important. And the leak, the constant leaks before this media show was done, of course, to prepare people in advance for to create many more multiple reactions. Their intent is to mesmerize the American public with the spectacle of yet another attempt to fix the Iraq problem. You know, these slick political con artists can come up with as many changes as needed to keep the public feeling obliged with each new adjustment to Iraq policy, to give the Bush administration another chance to see if this works. Well, it won't work. It can't be fixed. The administration's globalist directors don't want it fixed. And that's the issue that I'm putting out in tomorrow's World Affairs Brief. You know, Bush keeps pushing the word success in Iraq, which is as illusory as it is addictive to the public consciousness. You know, nobody in the public can say, well, we don't want success. I mean, it's like motherhood and apple pie. Everybody wants success. But I'm afraid it just can't be there. Announcing yet another bipartisan Iraq study group, led by Bush lackey Senator Joe Lieberman, the Bush administration intends to keep America flooded with these new proposals, one after another, to make sure the opposition is kept off balance by the perceived necessity to let the process run its course. Well, that can take us as long as they want, letting these processes run their course. You know, if this wasn't a strong message that we wanted something different Iraq, we certainly aren't getting something different. We're actually getting more of the same, a lot more of the same.
I agree with you totally, and I think it's the American people, at least our listeners, have to understand we have no intention of pulling out of the Middle East. This is all a charade, simply to placate the people, pat them on the head, and say, now we're really going to do a better job this time. Trust us.
Well, you know, it's working, you know, the process is working, but it's not aimed at success in any traditional sense of the word. What they're really aiming for, of course, is a globalist objective. I think it's a 3- or 4-pronged objective. One is to control oil, to turn it over to American corporations. Number two, I think there's a deliberate method or attempt to antagonize the Muslim world against the United States, which they're doing royally, to provoke some major form of retaliation in the future, and it won't be by the Muslim countries, but by their major sponsors, Russia and China. But one thing that worries me about the president snuck into his words after he talked about this new working commission with Joe Lieberman is that they were going to push forward all the other agendas which are yet hidden from the American public, like the building up of the United States military and additional 100,000 troops, like what he said, new ways to examine and mobilize talented American civilians to deploy overseas where they can help build democratic institutions and communities and nations recovering from war and tyranny. This sounds to me like mandatory public service in the budding stage. Watch out for this. I think there's going to be something more to this that we're going to see. Something like to accompany a draft. You can either be drafted, or if you refuse to be drafted, then you give mandatory 2-year service overseas to Iraq as a social, you know, Peace Corps worker, something along that variety. This just sounds like a very dangerous language, Dr. Stan.
Well, Chris, one of the things that really worries me, Joel, is where's the money going to come from? I mean, we're already having to borrow money just to keep going. And you can't keep, spending more than you take in year after year. You can't make it up certainly with volume. And this is going to eventually bankrupt our nation and destroy the value of our currency. There's just no way that they can keep doing what they're doing. And I think they're doing this intentionally. These are not stupid people. They're brilliant people.
That's right. If they had any intention of paying off this debt, they certainly wouldn't keep spending with abandon. It's literally impossible to pay off now. I think they know that. I think they intend to see the major world war that they're planning for wipe out this debt. I don't think it's ever going to get paid back. I think they're just going to let it go down the tubes. And everyone who holds those government-issued bonds or other forms of credit to the United States will be left holding the bag. You know, in any case, with all the talk of the surge in troops, Dr. Stan, Bush is still refusing to acknowledge and count the nearly 100,000 mercenary contractors in Iraq being paid an average of 3 to 10 times the salaries of regular soldiers. Now, these salaries are hidden inside government contracts, and they're usually open-ended contracts. These mercenaries are unaccountable. They're nearly immune from prosecution for their many illegal acts, including racing through towns at 90 miles an hour. They've run over children. They've killed people. They've never been brought to justice. They've shot people. They've raped women. These people are just out of control. And many times, they use arms with arrogance and power as if they have immunity, which I think they effectively do. There was a bill recently passed putting these mercenaries under the military code of uniform justice, but I doubt if you'll see any of the militaries arrest these people and bring them before a courts-martial. They'll have every excuse in the world not to, come under those, unless it's the secret, military courts that we're so worried about. Now, the most telling remark, Dr. Stan, of the entire speech was Bush's dramatic statement or threat when he said, "I have made it clear to the Prime Minister and other leaders that America's commitment is not open-ended. If the Iraq government does not follow through on its promises," now watch these horrendous consequences, he says, "it will lose the support of the American people and will lose the support of the Iraqi people." I just nearly took a double take when I heard that. Not open-ended implies a termination of occupation or assistance. It means we're going to go home if you don't perform. But there was no mention or hint of this in what he said. The only consequences he gave were that the Iraqi government would, quote, lose the support of people. That's it. No talk of going home. No talk of cutting off reconstruction aid. No hint of Americans leaving. In fact, the inevitable failure of this plan will be used to justify yet more money and intervention. This was implicit in his failure to detail any normal consequences. I think this backs up what you said. They certainly don't intend to leave, ever. And that's why he said the consequences wasn't that we're going to pack up and go home and leave you to your own devices. It was, you'll lose the support. Well, what does that mean,
Well, I suspect what it means is you're going to be out on your ear and we're going to replace you with somebody else.
That's right.
And I think the thing is that we do not have representative government over there. Anybody believes that we have a free democracy over there has to be incredibly stupid. We're running the whole show. Not only that, but we've established a Shia dictatorship. If you read the Iraqi constitution, everything is based upon Shia law. Before, we had a secular dictatorship. Now we have a sectarian dictatorship. I'd rather live under a secular dictatorship any time than a sectarian dictatorship, especially under Shia law. And the average American has never read the Iraqi constitution or realized what we've done to these poor, unfortunate people. I'm reading these articles. People are having to leave their homes, leave everything behind. Those who can leave the country have left. A couple of million have already left, but most people are trapped. They have no source of income. They have to leave their homes, their belongings. They're fleeing for their lives in Baghdad, which is supposedly under American control. I mean, there's total chaos there, and you can't tell me if we really wanted to do something, we couldn't do what Allenby had done back in, you know, in Palestine and Jerusalem after he took that city. He put everything under martial law. They brought in sufficient troops. They took total control. That's what you do when you're in the military, and they won't let our military run the war. It's all being run by George Bush and Dick Cheney.
You know, one thing that I haven't quite been able to figure out is how they've twisted arms of the Iraqi government to be so compliant and so much in line with this this Bush speech. It's obvious that the shuttling back and forth between Ambassador Khalilzad and al-Maliki has been getting his arms twisted so that he will... Bush, with a straight face, could actually say that this military plan was presented by the Iraqis to the Americans. I mean, nothing could be more false and untrue. This was an American plan from beginning to end. Even they got top Muslim cleric al-Sistani to come on board and say that he was in favor of total disarmament, that only the state should have any arms.
We'll be back in just a moment.
Some people believe a group of wealthy men control political parties, the American media, and the wealth of our nation. Is this true? Dr. Stanley Monteef spent 40 years studying secret societies and subversive movements. He lived in Africa for 3 years, and when he returned home, he studied the writings of the men who shaped the modern world. His book, Brotherhood of Darkness, identifies the people who control the world and the organizations they created. Dr. Monteef exposes the movement behind Rhodes scholarships, the origin of the Council on Foreign Relations, and the myths surrounding communism. He discusses the goal of all covert organizations, so if you read Brotherhood of Darkness, you will learn a secret that has been passed down through the centuries. When you learn this secret, you will understand what the future holds and what you must do to help preserve our nation. Call and order your copy. 877-300-7645. Only $12.95. That's 877-300-7695.
Hi, this is Ted Anderson, here for the 2007 Red Book. The commodity markets like gold, silver, copper, aluminum, and oil have exploded over the last year. This is a glaring testimonial of how quickly the U.S. dollar can be devalued. Many have turned to precious metals to provide a safe haven while increasing the potential profits. Though accumulating precious metals has been a proven method for the storage of wealth, it is important that you understand the market you are getting into. Midas Resources is offering the Red Book and Silver Dollar for only $27.95. The Red Book is the number one best-selling guide to gold and silver coins. Call for your copy today. It's 800-686-2237. If you've already accumulated or plan to get into the precious metals market, you simply must have the Red Book in your library. Call 800-686-2237. That's 1-800-686-2237.
Nuclear reactors provide economical energy, but would you be prepared during an accident? During nuclear disasters, great amounts of radioactive iodine are released into the atmosphere, which are then readily absorbed into the body. Medical Corps' potassium iodate gives you virtually complete protection from the most feared consequence of a nuclear accident, radioactive poisoning. Potassium iodate can protect against radioactive poisoning by filling the thyroid with good iodine. This shields the thyroid and prevents it from absorbing the harmful radioactive iodine. Potassium iodate is better than the iodide form because it is not as likely to cause upset stomachs in children, the elderly, the sick, and pets. Order the official potassium iodate for only $24 and save $5 by calling New Millennium at 888-803-4438. Call now and get free shipping. That's 888-803-4438.
Hey ladies, if you love to shop, then visit HerbalHealer.com to browse through their online catalog. You'll find thousands of effective, alternative, and natural products for you and the whole family. Besides the amazing products you'll find, this shopping is guilt-free because you're investing in your health, and your health is priceless. While online, sign up to receive the Herbal Healer newsletter, which will keep you informed on the latest and greatest products in education. Did you know that Herbal Healer offers not only natural medicine, but also tension-relieving herbal teas, cookbooks, aromatherapy, products for pampering, and more great products to help you soothe and relax after a long day. Want to learn more for yourself and to help others in the future? Join the Herbal Healer Correspondence Program. You can work at your own pace from the comfort of your own home. This accredited, exciting program can help you gain skills and knowledge. Can you believe you can find all this at one stop? HerbalHealer.com, celebrating 18 years of dedication.
Well, Dr. Stan, back here at the Genesis Communication Network, and our guest is Joel Skousen. Joel, pick the story up there.
Well, let me address the actual military plan of the president. He's saying something that in theory is good. The reason the Baghdad offensive failed, he said, was because they went in and engaged anyone who would shoot at them and bombed a few houses, but they didn't have enough troops to occupy the zones. Well, they still don't have enough troops, even with an additional 20,000 to occupy Baghdad. You know, if you've ever seen a Google satellite photo of Baghdad, even Sadr City, you have miles, square miles, of just a concrete jungle of houses stacked upon houses and apartments and backyards and sheds and in the greatest turmoil. It's a poverty-stricken area. There are literally, you know, hundreds and thousands of places to hide weapons. You could spend the next year going house to house just in Sadr City alone trying to ferret out weapons, let alone unless you had a complete checkpoint on every street corner, you couldn't stop the militias from at night taking them out of one hiding place and taking them to another that's already been searched. So there just simply isn't enough troops to so-called hold and occupy. It's certainly going to, you know, it's a no-win policy. There's really no way to stop an insurgency like this, especially when this new strategy, admittedly, said the script writer, won't end suicide bombings, assassinations, or IED attacks. And the reason that is because someone deep in the government knows, it's not Bush, that most of these car bombings are done by unknowing, innocent people who are being set up to be suicided by coalition dark side agents. As I described in my December 15th World Affairs brief, according to a few who have survived this ploy, innocent people are being arrested, given a car, and told to drive to some other place in the city to have their papers checked. And the car is loaded with explosives and detonated by remote control or by a helicopter following. All of this unbeknownst to the poor victim. So obviously, this plan for a surge in troops was being worked out long before this speech, even before the newly ordained Defense Secretary Robert Gates flew off to Baghdad to get his briefing. He ordered another brigade of Army 101st Airborne Division to Kuwait as a prelude to this buildup. He already must have known the game plan. The additional aircraft carrier task force was given orders to prepare weeks ago, so this isn't new either. Now, the real agenda, I believe, not only will this new surge in Iraq continue to foment antagonism against the U.S. government, this is a long-range goal of the globalists, necessary to provoke a huge retaliatory war, which is their object to bring about a new world order. At least that's my general theory. It is also providing an excuse to justify an even greater buildup of military power in the Middle East as the administration prepares for an attack on Iran and possibly Syria as well. Here are the hints throughout the script that the president read of the real agenda of this expanded war in the Middle East. First, he started talking about shifting the threat from, quote, insurgents, that's the typical title they use in Iraq, to the broader, more regional threat of, quote, radical Islamist extremists who would grow in strength and gain new recruits. They would be in a better position, said the president, to topple moderate governments, create chaos in the region, and use oil revenues to fund their ambitions. So notice this whole threat now is regional. And then he says directly, Iran would be emboldened in its pursuit of nuclear weapons if we fail in Iraq. Our enemies would have a safe haven from which to plan and launch attacks on the American people. Well, that's a long way from the American people. And certainly showed no connection between the 9/11 attack and Iraq. Even the connection between Al-Qaeda and 9/11 is in great disrepute now that there's so much evidence of American secret agents involved in placing explosives within the buildings and many other things which we've discussed before. But number two, he said, succeeding in Iraq also requires defending its territorial integrity and stabilizing the region in the face of, once again, he says, extremist challenges. He broadens the threat so it includes everything and everything around Iraq. This begins with addressing Iran and Syria. They're the two targets he mentions again. These two regimes are allowing terrorists and insurgents to use their territory to move in and out of Iraq. Iran is providing material support for attacks on American troops. Oh, I'm sorry, Iran, yes. We will disrupt the attacks on our forces. We will interrupt the flow of support from Iran and Syria, and we will seek out and destroy the networks providing advanced weaponry and training to our enemies in Iraq. Now, what he's basically doing there is painting a picture of justifying ongoing small incursions into these countries, special forces which will prep for the war, hopefully trying to engender in a reaction from Iran or Syria that can justify causing the actual strike. Number three. Oh, I guess we'll take a break.
Okay, fine. Well, our guest is Joel Skousen from World Affairs Brief, and I believe that we already have special forces over there operating in the various provinces of Iran. I believe we're financing the opposition to the mullahs there. There's tremendous unrest in Iran. I believe that they're going to do everything they can to try to get a revolution in Iran. How'd you like somebody was doing that here?
This broadcast is available on MP3 CD format at GCNlive.com or call toll-free 877-300-7645.
You can see the good life all around you. The people with the bigger house, the fancy cars. It seems like everyone's living the American dream, except you. Well, what if you could start making the money you deserve with an internet business that virtually runs itself? Make cash even when you're sleeping by selling products you don't have to see, store, or even pay for. And what if you could get started for free? It's not too good to be true. It's a proven system from Internet Speedway. And once you get started, the computer does the work while you collect the cash. And while supplies last, you can request a free CD that shows you how. Just call 1-800-889-2994. The secret to the good life isn't working harder. It's working smarter. Whether you just want a second income or you're ready to quit your job and live the good life, call now for your free CD. Only available through this exclusive radio offer. For your free CD, call 1-800-889-2994. 1-800-889-2994. 1-800-889-2994.
Black Berkey purification elements are more powerful than any gravity filter element on the market. These awesome elements are used in Berkey purification systems, and they can also be used to upgrade most other gravity filtration systems. They can purify raw, untreated water by removing pathogenic bacteria, cysts, parasites, trihalomethanes, and chemicals such as chlorine, atrazine, styrene, and MTBE. These elements also reduce unwanted heavy metals such as lead, mercury, and aluminum. Unbelievably, they even remove small microparticulate from water like food coloring particles. Yet, they leave in the nutritional minerals that your body needs. Moreover, because they are recleanable, Black Berkey elements are more economical than the standard disposable elements, providing fresh, pure water for less than 2 cents per gallon.
Get a 2-pack for only $99 or a 4-pack for only $188 by calling New Millennium at 888-803-4438. That's 888-803-4438 or order on the web at berkeywater.com.
Hey folks, Alex Jones here with an important question. When was the last time you used pure soap? I mean the hard-to-find kind that's all natural and not full of corrosive toxins and chemicals and detergents that just dry out your skin and have been connected to very serious health problems? Let me tell you something about the Calbin Pure Soap Company. There's a 100% unconditional guarantee on all their wonderful products. They're all natural, they're triple concentrated, they're factory direct, factory owned, and operated since 1947. Earth-friendly pure soaps for bathing, laundry, and kitchen. Try pure soap once and I'll guarantee you'll never use anything else. Now for the first time, Calbin Pure Soap is available factory direct to you and your family. Save up to 85% off supermarket and retail store prices. Call today for a Calbin Soap catalog at 1-800-340-7091. That's 1-800-340-7091 or on the web at calbinpuresoap.com.
Well, Dr. Stan back here at the Genesis Communication Network, and our guest is Joel Skousen. But before we go on, Joel, I'd like you to give out your website and how people can get in touch with you and maybe even get a trial copy of your weekly newsletter.
Thank you, Dr. Stan. My newsletter, The World Affairs Brief, is showcased on my website, www.genesis.org. worldaffairsbrief.com. There you have a rundown of all the news stories my staff posts on the site every day. They're the best of what you get on the Internet and in traditional news sources. Then every Friday I do an analysis of those news stories, condense them down to the most important issues, and add what I feel are the things that the media doesn't tell you. You know, distortions of the media occur mostly not by direct lies to the public, but by specifically omitting key truths and important issues that would change people's perception of what's really going on in the world, just as we're talking about in today's brief. Now, if people want, there is a modest subscription price per year for the weekly World Affairs Brief. If you want a sample copy to review of that, you can email me at editor@worldaffairsbrief.com. That's editor@worldaffairsbrief.com. A particular interest might be to your listeners my end of the year issue about called The Big Picture, where I put out my general theory about where I think this war on terror is leading to, why it's going to lead to a third world war, and the globalization of our world without national sovereignty. It's a very interesting issue where I update my timing and projections for the coming decade.
I certainly recommend it. I read it regularly. I'm looking forward to getting my copy tomorrow. So pick up the story there, Joel.
Okay, we're talking about the indications within the speech of the president that, in fact, this entire agenda is a cover for a future attack, which I believe is coming in this year, 2007, before November. November is the deadline that he set for the Iraqis to take over all security of all provinces. There's no way they're going to do that without it descending into civil war. So I think it's safe bet to say that these other agendas are going to come to pass before November. And when he talked about, you know, shifting the threat from specific attacks in Iraq to broad regional threats from radical Islamic extremists, talking about attacking Iran directly as supporters of the insurgency in Iraq. And number three, he says, I recently ordered the deployment of an additional carrier strike group to the region. I believe this is in direct preparation. And he also talked about sharing and deploying another more Patriot air defense missiles. Well, you don't need any Patriot systems. And this is a very key point, Dr. Stan. You don't need any Patriot air defense systems for the existing insurgency in Iraq. This can only be there because, and in anticipation of the Iranian missile retaliation, surely to come on the heels of the planned U.S.-Israeli aerial attack on their nuclear facilities. If there isn't a bigger red flag that says this is all about a future attack on Iran, it's that statement about deploying Patriot air defense systems. He didn't even bother to try to explain what that was related to in the insurgency.
Very. I think that's such an important point.
Now, number four, of course, he's going to use the new Lieberman Study Group, this ongoing working group, which is going to churn out all of the additional agenda that and rubber stamp the new agenda of this administration. Will meet regularly with me and my administration, he says, will help strengthen my relationship with Congress, and we can begin to work together to increase the size of the active Army and Marine Corps so that America has the armed forces we need for the 21st century. He isn't even hiding this. This isn't about Iraq. This is about building military forces for future needs in the 21st century. He knows, we know, that we're going to war in a world war, and it's going to be caused by the triggering effects of this ongoing intervention in Iraq. Besides, they're contemplating 92,000 additional troops. It will take almost 2 years, if they do everything right, just to get those troops. And I think, frankly, we're going to have a draft after this next Iran war because of the new troop loads that will be placed on our people. They'll call for a draft. At the same time, we may get this two-year involuntary service of our youth that I felt like they were hints, and we may find that in the State of the Union address a more specific proposal on this.
It sounds like we're going to get the worst of all worlds the way things are going.
It's moving rapidly, Dr. Stan. It just shocks me how brazen they are about thumbing their nose at the results of the election, and in fact using it to leverage off of that to do something even worse than what they were doing before, and the people just sit back with their eyes up and say, is this really happening? We feel powerless to change it, and we are powerless. There is a phony opposition. You know, the Dems don't intend to end the war. I listen to Nancy Pelosi prevaricate, evade, stall, and change the subject every time her NPR host asked her if the Democrats were serious about cutting off funding for the Iraq war. He must have asked her twice or three times, just like they did in Vietnam. When pressed, she would always fall back on the old excuse, quote, we will do everything necessary to support our troops. In other words, no, we won't cut anything off funding because it would hurt our troops. Well, that isn't true at all. You can cut off funding in a way that cuts off the funds for the war, for the aid, for other things, and just simply say, bring troops home. You don't have to say that you're going to leave them hanging out there because you cut off funding from the war. You know, this is a commander-in-chief, and technically some his nose at Nancy Pelosi in Congress. Once they've given him the authority, which they've done kind of backhandedly, you know, he can do what he wants, and they are the only policy they've got is cut off funding, and they have said, we're not going to do that.
And, of course, I think Nancy Pelosi also said, well, you know, we can't really tell him what to do. He's the commander-in-chief.
That's exactly
even if
what
we don't
said.
Like
That's
what he's true. Doing, he's the commander-in-chief. Ladies and gentlemen, he's not the dictator. And they can stop him tomorrow if they wanted to. I think that it's all smoke and mirrors. It's to give you the idea that the Democrats are really going to do something, and I fear it's going to be just more of the same, more blood.
And they could bring impeachment procedures
sure.
to stop him in his tracks. They could do all kinds of things. But they are part of it. You know, when I watched Nancy Pelosi, I could see this faint smirk whenever she would, talk about not cutting off funding for the war. She was desperately trying to evade, openly admitting that they have no intention of stopping this war. But more of that came out in an interview with Chris Matthews on several TV programs. He's become quite anti-war, just like Lou Dobbs has, one of the two of all TV commentators. On the days preceding Nancy Pelosi's ascension to the speakership, you know, she was being treated like some queen being crowned. He was demanding that she use the power of the purse to cut off funding for the war. Yesterday, a tete-a-tete with Matt Lauer, his NBC colleague, he opined that the Democrats have no choice but to fund the war so long as Matt Lauer was saying, Democrats have no choice to fund the war so long as U.S. troops are in the field. You know, this mantra has never stopped them from cutting off funding to the Vietnam War. This is a completely novel concept that has never held any water before. Now, on Hardball, Chris Matthews had a tete-a-tete with the Democratic strategist Hillary Rosen and former Republican Representative Susan Molinari. Demanded Chris of Rosen, he said, will the Democrats do what they promised to do in the campaign? Will they let the voters down again and not stop this war? When Rosen replied with an excuse that Jack Murtha, who now chairs the committee controlling and funded the war, is, quote, committed to evaluating where we are, Matthews correctly snapped back, words, words, words. We want to see some action. You know, this is Jack Murtha who claimed that he wanted to get everybody out right now. Now he's prevaricating. Now he's backpedaling. Now he's saying, well, let's study this and let's work on this a little bit. I mean, this guy is as corrupt as every other member of Congress, and he's definitely playing a role.
I'm sure he is. Well, I hope that the American people, at least our listeners, will have some grasp of what's going on, because this is all leading into a much expanded war in the Middle East. This is my fear. And they're not sending another carrier group over there. They've already got the Boxer. It sounds like an attack force. Is that is that some sort of marine landing system? Do you know what
sure,
the Boxer
it
force
certainly is? It's a marine landing force with Marines on board, all the things for a Marine Corps landing. And that's what it's there for. They're certainly not going to land troops from the sea into Baghdad.
Right.
Well, the president lost no time, Dr. Stan, at beginning his incitement of Iran today. According to the AP, U.S.-led multinational forces detained six Iranians Thursday in a raid on Tehran's diplomatic mission, a mini-embassy in the northern city of Erbil. Hours after George W. Bush accused Iran in support of aiding the militants, he sends in this operation. Now, I think the U.S. is obviously trying to find official evidence of Iranian collusion with the insurgents. So they were ransacking everything, taking every document they could find. They'll be sorting through this. and looking for any connection that the Iranians have for supporting some of the insurgents against the United States. And believe me, we'll hear about it, of what they have found.
Well, don't you really think that they are supporting the insurgents there? Certainly they're Shia Muslims. And, you know, these militias got to be getting their weapons and funding from someplace.
Yes, but most of these weapons and funding have come from, backhanded U.S. sources. We've had lots of weapons shipped in from Jordan. They are AK-47s. Why the U.S. is shipping in AK-47s and then losing them, losing tens of thousands of them, I think these are backdoor ways of getting into the insurgency. Then you have the fact that as the U.S. went in, they purposely gave orders to the military to evacuate these huge depots where they were filled with explosive material and let the insurgents come in and walk away from them. You can't tell me our satellites didn't have observation of those trucks moving up and hauling away those explosives, as well as knowing where they went. So it's hard to tell, you know, exactly what's going on, but I can say from the evidence that we have partially that the U.S. Is very much involved in making sure that the insurgency is not shut down, just as they are in many provocations, including overreacting to military airstrikes, the prison system, which continues to take in innocent people, torture them, and even Americans with passports are tortured, as I pointed out in a couple of briefs in December. You know, in other news on the Iran targeting issue, the UK Independent got a leak from a highly placed military officer in Israel saying that Israel was actively making preparations for an aerial nuclear attack on Iran's nuclear facilities. Now, Israel always denies this, but the Independent says its source is not mistaken. They're backing up what they say. Bush has set a November timetable in Iraq, as I mentioned, to take over security functions in all the provinces. And I think this attack on Israel will come. There's a good chance it may be precipitated by Iran, by Israel, claiming that they have every right to stop Iran's nuclear program just as they stopped Iraq's nuclear program.
Well, you know, one of the things that really intrigues me about these reports is we often hear that the Israelis are going to strike using tactical nuclear weapons. Now, you know, there's one thing's a nuclear bomb, another thing's a tactical nuclear weapon. I don't think that Israeli has any of those. In fact, I've heard rumors that we've been actually recently given them these tactical nuclear weapons. Have you heard anything about that?
Yes, it's quite clear that they have had tactical nuclear weapons for a long time. Anytime you can, they've taken Tomahawk missiles and others in their new submarine fleet and armed them with small nuclear weapons, and those are tactical nuclear weapons. So they've had the technology for some time to miniaturize and put into small warheads their nuclear weapons. So I think they have it. I think they've probably got neutron bombs as well. But they're going to use nuclear weapons, I think you have to penetrate the deep underground facilities that Iran has. Now, with all of this said, I want to make it clear that Iran is preparing, trying to get nuclear weapons, just as Iraq did have weapons of mass destruction. The larger question is, of course, is that who helped them get that nuclear technology? And the answer is the United States did. The United States actually gave Iran plans to the nuclear weapons, knowing that it would fall into their hands. It was a special operation that they did, but it was meant to fall into Iranian hands, so-called by accident. So the U.S. does know and has known for a long time about Iranian nuclear ambitions, but certainly the threat isn't the United States. The threat is Israel. And, but these provocations and these building up the best enemy as money can buy, as you have often said, is the provides the motive for doing an attack, and that attack comes when it meshes with a globalist agenda. That's why I thought it was very significant that for the first time in Israel's history, they began to attack civilian targets openly and directly in Lebanon this time, following a U.S. pattern of antagonizing civilian populations. Israel, in one fell swoop, destroyed all of the goodwill that they had built up over the years with the Christian Moronites in Lebanon and other factions, completely destroyed. There's nobody in Lebanon now that cares for Israel. And I don't think they would have done that stupidly or without some ulterior motive. And the motive can only be related to the same policy that the U.S. has in attacking these wars, whether it's in Bosnia, Kosovo, or now in Iraq, of just obliterating civilian infrastructure when they go in to supposedly attack military installations.
And, of course, the great tragedy of the Israeli invasion of Lebanon was if they were going to do that and they were going to risk losing all the support of the Christian Maronites there, why didn't they finish the job? And, of course, they didn't finish the job because we and Javier Solana went in and said, you will stop. And Mr. Olmert said, right away, sir. So, really, the leaders of Israel, in my estimation, are totally subservient to the internationalist forces.
And the Israeli public really doesn't understand that.
Right.
The Israeli leaders are playing like they're right-wing conservatives, just like President Bush and his globalist team are playing like they're right-wing conservatives. This is a very deceptive thing that most conservatives have trouble seeing through, that is the wolf in sheep's clothing. Now,
well,
by no means is Bush a wolf. He's a script reader, the real power behind the throne, who's his main handler is Vice President Dick Cheney, and he's still there. His staff has 88 people, Dr. Stan. It's a huge staff for a vice president's office. He's got the largest bunker of anyone in the United States government now, sitting below his residence at the Naval Observatory. This guy knows that a major nuclear attack is coming on the United States, and it's not some rogue attack from North Korea. This is a major attack from Russia or China, which we'll eventually be exposed to. I'm not predicting that we're vulnerable to that till the middle of the next decade due to China's inability to launch something or take on the West until the middle of the next decade. But in the meantime, the United States continues to provoke domestic terrorism. One of the biggest, the top story of tomorrow's brief is going to be, in fact, that we finally have proof of police informants provoking domestic terror in New York City. Remember this past Monday, the New York subway bomber was sentenced, a Pakistani immigrant, to 30 years in prison for allegedly planning to place a bomb on the New York subway. Come to find out, according to his defense lawyer, they have tape-recorded evidence provided by the government that, in fact, this informant, who was his handler of this guy, induced him to do all of it, gave him the plans, taught him how to do things, and then the guy wanted to back out. It's right on the tape recording saying, I think I'd better talk to my mother about this before we go through with this. I don't want to hurt anybody, he said. And we hear the informant trying to encourage him to continue to go through with the plot.
I know. It's really, we'll have to talk more about it. Thanks so much. Bye-bye.
This is Pastor David Whitney with Institute on the Constitution. Our founders constructed this constitutional republic with the intent that citizens would function as the final check on the power of civil government. But that design would only work if the citizens understood our form of government as well as their responsibilities within that structure. That's why Institute on the Constitution has put together a host kit that enables anyone, anywhere, with any group of people to instruct them on our founding documents. We urge you to order a host kit. You can call us toll-free at 866-730-9796. That's 866-730-9796. Or you can order it on the web. Go to our website, iotconline.com. The only way our republic will survive is if its citizens arm themselves with the knowledge of our Founding Fathers' original intent of the Constitution, the Declaration, and the Bill of Rights. Call us, 866-730-9796.
Now you can bring Berkey purification power anywhere with the Sport Berkey filtration bottle. Ideal for sporting games, camping or boating, or Sport Berkey is small enough to store in your glove box, so it's ideal backup for unexpected emergencies like blackouts, floods, or earthquakes. It's simply the best personal water filtration system available. So effective you can drink raw, untreated water from lakes, rivers, and streams. Unlike other sport bottles, the Sport Berkey's patented filter formulation is so powerful it removes cysts, parasites, harmful bacteria, and chemicals like herbicides and pesticides. It even reduces radon-222, lead, and other heavy metals. This lightweight, rugged 22-ounce filter is small enough to go everywhere, so take one to work and keep another in your glove box for emergencies. Get the Berkey Sport for only $39. Get two for $70 by calling New Millennium at 888-803-4438. Order your Berkey Sport today. That's toll-free, 888-803-4438, or order on the web at berkeywater.com.
Did you ever wonder how an opera singer that hits a high note is able to shatter a wine glass? Well, the glass has a natural resonance. If the resonant frequency force making the glass vibrate is big enough, the size of the vibration will become so large that the glass shatters. Using a similar principle, Royal Raymond Rife discovered that disease organisms can be destroyed using different resonant frequencies. The BioSolutions frequency instrument uses the same technology for relief or elimination of pain and disease conditions with no side effects. The 2006 BioSolutions Plus is the easiest to operate frequency instrument ever developed. Its easy reference guide will allow you to begin using the instrument within minutes. Simple step-by-step instructions using pictures are easy to follow. Customer satisfaction is guaranteed or your money back. Don't just treat symptoms. Eliminate the cause. For more information, call BioSolutions toll-free 1-866-885-6625. That's 1-866-885-6625. 1-866-885-6625.
Well, Dr. Stan, back here at the Genesis Communication Network, and I have to remind you that as of Monday, we're changing our shortwave frequencies. Our afternoon program will be 9.480. 9.480. Our evening program will be 5.755. That's 5.755. They're already broadcasting there, and we've heard excellent reports that they're being well received. So please tell your friends about it. Get them listening to our program there or on the internet at radioliberty.com. And certainly what we need to do is build up a vast listening audience all across America. We also can be heard on Telstar 5, and if you'd like to know about getting an inexpensive satellite system where you can listen to us 24 hours a day, myself and Joyce Riley, why give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. Joel was talking about the idea of the best enemies money could buy. We carry a book by Professor Sutton by that same title and a video by Professor Sutton by that same title. An interview I did with Professor Sutton back in 1980 before he went away, going into how we financed the North Vietnamese during the Vietnam War, how we financed Adolf Hitler and built him up so we could have a nice bloody war with him, how we financed the Chinese communists, how we financed Russia, the Bolsheviks, immediately after they took power back in 1918. You have to understand the best enemies that money could buy. We also carry the books by Professor Sutton, Wall Street and the Rise of Hitler, Wall Street and the Bolshevik Revolution. You need to understand that how this whole system works. I mean, after all, who is funding the Taliban that are killing our boys in Afghanistan today? Why, they're being funded and armed in Pakistan. They come into Afghanistan, they kill our boys, and they escape back into Pakistan. But we can't go there because that's a sovereign country that we're funding. We're financing it. Ladies and gentlemen, it's all a charade. The only trouble is an awful lot of good people are dying unnecessarily. You need to get the book we carry, one of them, entitled The Devil's Game. If you want to understand why we never got Osama bin Laden, why, you need to get the book Crude Politics. It gives them the background of the long plan to go to war with Afghanistan long before 9/11, and then the fact that when Osama was trapped there in the Tora Bora Mountains there in December of 2001, why they wouldn't let our special forces go after him. Why would you do something like that? Because the whole thing is a charade. Ahmadinejad, the president of Iran, looks like he came from central casting. Why would he be making such stupid statements? It's all designed to take us into World War III. Understand that. Of course, you need to go to our website and pull down our newsletters to understand 9/11. Let me suggest you go to radioliberty.com. Radioliberty.com and pull down my August, September, October and November newsletters, and soon the December newsletter will be there. You have our permission to copy them and disseminate them, or we'll be putting them into a little pamphlet very soon, inexpensive, that you can pass out. And we need to get people to understand that most of what you think you know just ain't so. Unfortunately, reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Christian civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. You need to get my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, and or the DVD, and or the video, or the tape, or get the tape either the DVD or video and the book together, the Brotherhood of Darkness special, at a specially reduced price. If you want to understand the background of our current war in Iraq, you need to get Iraq, the Untold Story. There's the video, there's the syllabus, and you need to get the two of them together so you'll have the documents you can show to others and understand the tragedy, because every war of the last century was manipulated, and we're being manipulated into a war with Iran. The American people don't want to go to war with Iran and Syria. And it is totally unnecessary to protect Israel. Who is funding, you know, and helping Egypt prepare to attack Israel? Why, we are, ladies and gentlemen. Nothing as it appears to be. Pray for America, and please pray for Radio Liberty.
Dad, can we stop? We need to go to the bathroom.
You're listening to the Global Star Radio Network, located at Telstar 5 KU band, frequency 11836, symbol rate 20770. Thank you for listening.
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Christian civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, the views of our guests, and the views of our callers. And we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. But please hold your calls for the time being. We have this on the line, Mike Berger, who's put together a fascinating video on 911, and it's got, of course, not only pictures of the towers coming down, but interviews and an excellent discussion about why we lost so many of the firemen there, the fact that their radios didn't work. But I'm going to let Mike tell you this story that he's put forward in this video. Hi, Mike. How are you doing?
Great. How are you, Dr. Stan?
I'm doing just fine. So why don't you tell our listeners who don't know who you are just a little bit about yourself and how it was that you happened to make this new video.
Well, I'm originally from New York. My family still lives there. And I originally was skeptical. I believed the official story, and it wasn't until I read about the options trading and looked at the data myself that I began to really look into the events surrounding 9/11 seriously. And in December of 2005, I had the pleasure of meeting Professor Jones for the first time and interviewed him at Brigham Young in his lab. And I had helped to get him a sample of the dust to test, and had spoke with him regarding what he would need in terms of physical evidence in order to try to test his hypothesis that these buildings were brought down by controlled demolition. And that is what led to making the film, because for me, the events in New York are really the only events that left physical evidence that could disprove the official story. And so I thought that if we were to get that evidence and test, which Professor Jones has tested three independent samples of steel from the site, and one was from a memorial and two were from volunteers at Ground Zero who wanted to remain anonymous because of fear of prosecution under the Patriot Act, because they were told not to take any pictures at the site at Ground Zero and certainly not to remove any evidence. And of the thousands of people who volunteered there, many of those people took mementos with them. And so two of the other samples were given by volunteers from Ground Zero. And in his testing, he found that there was residue of thermite or thermite-type chemical, which was used to cut steel. And this matched, actually, one of the statements put out in the original FEMA report, where they showed two samples of severely deteriorated metal and stated that the extreme sulfidation in the steel could not easily be explained and it required further investigation. And so that's how I came to make the film, and later interviewed Kevin Ryan two different times and learned about his story of basically when he worked at Underwriters Lab, the CEO had visited his division and had said that they should be proud of the work that Underwriters Labs did in testing the steel that went into the towers. And he started following the reports that were being issued by NIST and wrote a letter to Frank Gale, who was doing part of the metallurgy studies in those reports. And this letter, when published on the Internet, led to him being fired. And Kevin Ryan is actually now suing as a whistleblower.
Basically, what was this about? Was this this was the strength of the steel before the buildings came down?
Well, to this point, actually, there's a great deal of controversy over whether or not the steel was originally tested. From my understanding,
hold that thought right
sure.
there. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay. Our guest this afternoon is Mike Berger, who's put together a fascinating video going into the background of 911. And like so many of us, he really originally accepted the original story of what happened. And then he had an opportunity of talking to Dr. Stephen Jones, who is a professor of physics at Brigham Young University. And Professor Jones brought up a number of reasons why he seriously questioned what had happened, you know, and the official story, because construction, those buildings could not have possibly come down the way that they did without some sort of controlled demolition. And so Mike actually helped Professor Jones get a couple of samples of the steel, which nobody was supposed to take, but somebody did, and they had evidence of thermite in them, or thermite. And then, of course, this might very well explain why those buildings came down. But the question is, how did Osama bin Laden get the thermite into the buildings? Or maybe it wasn't Osama bin Laden, and maybe that's why they didn't want people taking pictures at the site where the buildings came down, why they didn't want anybody taking any samples, why they absolutely refused to allow any investigation, any forensic investigation of the rubble, and it was immediately cut up and shipped overseas so it could not be tested. And everything was doing, any residual was kept under armed guard so that nobody could check to see if the official story was correct. And then of course, Mike was telling us about another person he was interviewing. You pick up the story up there. Don't be afraid to be a little repetitive. We have a new audience with us.
Sure. Kevin Ryan, we interviewed Kevin Ryan for the film as well, Jim Hoffman, as the background to the hypothesis and the research that we based the points in the film on. And Kevin Ryan had worked at Underwriters Lab, and after 9/11, I believe the CEO had visited his division. He worked in the water division and had told him they should be proud of the work that Underwriters did certifying the original steel because the buildings held up as long as they did. Now, this is a controversial point because to this day there are claims that the steel was never tested. Nobody has ever been able, the government has never produced any documentation, the Port Authority has never produced any documentation on the original tests of the steel. But Kevin Ryan wrote a letter to one of the investigators, Frank Gale.
I'm going to ask you to hold that right there, and we'll be back in just a moment as soon as we bring our other stations on board here. Hang on.
Sure.
Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest today is Mike Berger, who's put together a video on 911, and he's simply saying that there was a man named Kevin Ryan who was involved with the group that was the Underwriters, and they were, of course, involved with the testing of the steel in the building. And, of course, but you picked the story up there.
Sure. Well, Kevin Ryan had written to Frank Gale, who was in charge of one of the metallurgy, doing metallurgy tests under the NIST investigation. And his tests, what he found in his tests, was that the steel would have withstood the fires, that it wouldn't have lost its strength, and that even in the NIST report, the government's own investigation, they published results of these paint defamation tests, which basically they looked at the samples that they had retained from the site at the paint, and from that they could tell how hot the fires had been in the towers. And from these tests, they were able to determine that the pieces of steel were, the majority of the steel had never been exposed to temperatures over 250 degrees Celsius, and there were some pieces that may have been exposed to temperatures as high as 600 degrees Celsius, but none of these temperatures were sufficient to melt the steel, which never accounted for the molten metal, which has been in pictures and which was described at the site by several people who were there. And it also can't account for the collapse of the towers because the steel was never heated long enough, never got hot enough to lose its strength. There have been people making claims that the steel would lose 50% of its strength, but what these tests had shown was that the steel would not have lost that much strength, and this can't account for the collapse of the towers. And when this letter was made public on the internet, which Kevin Ryan wrote, it was his own opinion. He never wrote it as representing Underwriters Labs, and he made that clear in the letter at the time. He was subsequently fired.
Now, of course, this is what happens to anybody who asks questions today, and usually they end up many times at beginning death threats, and people will break into their homes, and there's an organized pattern to intimidate and frighten anybody who questions the official government story. And we've had this from person after person after person. We've interviewed, and so many of them, all they have to do is ask a question, and they lose their job. And so pick the story up there.
Yeah, and that pattern has been actually, you're right, has been repeated in the intelligence fields, FBI members who came public, etc. And getting back to the film, we also interviewed Glenn Corbett. Now, here's a fire sciences professor in New York. He was actually involved in the investigation. He does believe the official explanation for the collapse. We included him, though, because he was one of the vocal critics when the steel was being hauled off and destroyed. The steel was evidence at a crime scene. It should have never been destroyed without a thorough forensic investigation.
So why would they allow it to be investigated any more than they'd allow the crime scene in Oklahoma to be investigated? They immediately tore the building down and disposed of it and put it under armed guard. Why would you do that in Oklahoma? Why would you do the same thing, and even the same company involved in demolishing the buildings and getting the material out? It doesn't make sense.
No, it doesn't. And even the firefighters and Glenn Corbett and Fire Engineering Magazine, there was quite vocal outrage expressed by these men that this was the greatest building collapse and failure in history, the largest loss of firefighters at an event in the United States, and that for the enormity of this event, it would require and necessitated an enormous forensic investigation, because if these buildings, both the Twin Towers and Building 7, collapsed due to, in the case of Building 7, fire and structural damage, and in the case of the Twin Towers, damage from the impact of the planes and fire. These would be the first collapses of its type, and the implications for safety for people who live and work in high-rise office buildings, one would think this would require an enormous investigation. And yet, the first investigation done by FEMA was composed of volunteers. They had no authority, and they had no money to do a thorough investigation, as well as they had very limited access to the site, which is another unusual aspect of all of this. They had a guided tour on one day. That was the only access they actually had to the site.
Well, if they were doing an investigation, why weren't they allowed to go in and investigate and take specimens and samples and certainly take pictures and do all of the things you'd ordinarily do if you were doing an investigation of a crime scene? Because even if Osama bin Laden is 100% responsible, we should have the documentation.
Right, and you know, and there's a similar pattern as well as that with Oklahoma City. I believe the investigators there were not allowed on site either.
No, they weren't.
And there's overlap as well. Many of the engineers involved in writing the reports on the investigation were the same men who worked on the Oklahoma City investigation. And another curiosity is the same men who wrote the reports on behalf of NIST and participated in the investigation for NIST also wrote reports for Silverstein's reports on the insurance claim and on the insurance company's reports. So they had inherent conflicts of interest, and there are over a million engineers in the country. And Kevin Ryan has pointed out that with all the engineers in the country, it's kind of odd that these same names and same faces keep popping up, that these were the same men who were on the documentaries on Nova and the History Channel, etc., and these were the same men who were putting out conflicting reports with explanations for why these buildings collapsed, depending on who they were working for. So these are some of the topics that the film goes into. There's a great deal more. We also get into Building 7, of course, and the media response to the collapse of Building 7, which is to not ever show it.
Oh, I think, of course, the major thing that really convinced me was watching Building 7 come down. And for our listeners out there, this video has excellent pictures of Building 7 coming down. Well, you know, because, but what I suggest is people, in addition, go up on the Internet, Google in Building 7 videos, and you'll see a number of them, and watch it come down again and again and again and again. And eventually you realize that this is not a normal building coming down. This is a controlled demolition. Is that the impression you have?
Well, yeah, I think it's very difficult to argue that it is something otherwise, because, again, especially with Building 7, even though there were fires and even though there was structural damage to the south face of the building when the North Tower collapsed, you know, the government's own reports describe the damage and describe where the collapse initiated, which was under the East Mechanical Penthouse. And you can see this in many of the videos. This East Penthouse collapses into the building first, and then about 3 or 4 seconds later, the structure comes down.
But it's the base of the structure. In other words, it starts out with the collapse of the roof of the building in the very, very center, which is a standard technique if you're going to do a controlled demolition, because you have to do that. You have to collapse the central core of the building so it collapses inward rather than collapses outward. But then after the central core of the building goes, then the base of the building goes and the whole thing comes down. But they seem to be two entirely separate issues.
Well, and you know, the building itself was built with an asymmetrical support structure. The building was built on a Con Edison electrical grid, so it had cantilevered supports holding up the building. Now, the fires in the building were in isolated pockets, so one would ask, how would the structure collapse symmetrically, simultaneously, and evenly when the fires, and this would be the same argument, part of the argument for the towers as well, even with the heat generated from the fires, the heat and the intensity of those fires can't heat all of the steel evenly across the entire structure. So if steel is going to fail, and it's going to fail due to fire, which is the official explanation essentially, then why would the building collapse symmetrically, even parts of the buildings in the case of the towers that had never been exposed to fire? So Building 7, I think, is a perfect example of how what we're seeing is very difficult to explain in any other terms, especially when you look at the building just to the east of Building 7, which was the Federal Office Building or the Post Office, which was only about 50 feet away from Building 7. And when you look at the videos and you see how this east penthouse collapses first, what has always struck me as odd is that if the internal structure of the building is collapsing on the east side, you would think the building would go towards the collapsed area. You would think it would fall to the east. And yet when you look at the pictures of the debris field, the debris never touched the post office, which was just to the east, less than 50 feet away. And Building 7 was an enormous building. You're talking 500 feet tall. It was twice the height of the building to the east, and yet it didn't damage that building whatsoever. So, and again, the government has never, it still has not put out its final report on the collapse of Building 7. So this building that was never hit by a plane that collapsed in broad daylight, we still don't have the explanation for that collapse. And as Glenn Corbett pointed out, if this was the enormity of this tragedy, one would think that would be one of the first things we would try to find out is how these buildings collapsed, especially Building 7, since it wasn't hit by a plane.
Well, we're going to be back here in just a moment or two with our guest, Mike Berger. What's the title of your video, Mike?
It is called Improbable Collapse, The Demolition of Our Republic.
All right, Improbable Collapse, The Demolition of Our Republic. And we're going to be back here in just a couple of minutes with Mike. And at that time, we'll go into this in more detail, because I think it's an important issue. And the question is, if we have not been told the truth about what happened that day, if anything we've been told is a lie, then everything is a lie. And coming war with Iran, it was, well, this is Dr. Stan, I guess, is Mike Berger. You know, one of the interesting things about the Building 7 is the story that's been told about Larry Silverstein, who owned the building, and his remark about pulling the building. Now, many people have suggested that phrase actually referred to, actually taking the building down. But very shortly, about a year or so, 2 years after the 911, suddenly there is a video for television with John Travolta about firefighters. And it's a very touching story about this fire crew. And but this one man is trapped in a building, one of the firefighters. And there's just no way they're going to get him out. He's going to be burned alive. And John Travolta has to make that decision. And he finally says, all right, we're going to pull the building. We're going to pull the building. We're going to pull the building. And programmed into our minds was the idea that you mean pull the firefighters out of the building. That's what that term meant. That's what Larry Silverstein was saying. Or were they implanting in the minds of the American people the idea that pull the building didn't mean pull the building down or allow it to collapse? It meant pull the firefighters out. Did you pick up on that, Mike?
Yeah, you know, one of the strange things there was that the people had already evacuated Building 7 earlier in the day. So that's not really the best argument to make for what Mr. Silverstein was saying. And then again, furthermore, I mean, the fire department isn't in the job of demolishing buildings.
And how would you get all those explosives in there? And why would you take it down on this same traumatic day? I mean, the story really doesn't quite make sense. There's no way. If that was a controlled demolition, then why don't they come forward and say it was a controlled demolition?
Well, I think because that would imply that the building had to have been wired in advance, and that, again, would also pose another problem for the official story, which is why would buildings in New York have been wired for demolition purposes?
Well, there's so many unanswered questions, and I think that this is really, we need to get to the bottom of this. Every American needs to ask that, because so far, we've lost over 3,000 men in Iraq, and probably 50,000 injured between Iraq and Afghanistan. It's estimated that somewhere between 200,000 and 800,000 Iraqi civilians have died as a result of our invading the country, and somebody's responsible for it. Can't be Osama bin Laden, because he's hiding up in Pakistan, so who's responsible for what's happened in Iraq? But it all goes back to what happened on 911. That's why I think it's so important that you and the others have put together these videos. Tell us about some of the other interviews you have, because you actually have four sections on the video. We watched it the other evening. You actually have some sections, actually some interviews with somebody who worked with the radios that the firemen used, and I thought that was fascinating. They gave them radios that they knew didn't work.
Yeah, you know, that's a story that really doesn't get a lot of attention. There's a bonus short piece on the DVD, which is based on a book put out by one of the firefighters called Radio Silence. He was a battalion captain before 9/11. His name is John Joyce. And he was in charge of tactical training for the fire department of the city of New York. And before 9/11, the firefighters had the same radios, which were already antiquated in 93. And in 93, they found out that these radios didn't work in the towers. Now, each of the
Hold that thought right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Mike Berger, and he's telling us about part of his video. It actually has four parts on it, four separate parts, and one of them is a talk that is given by a fire captain based upon a book that he had written. This is one of the fire captains there in New York City based upon a book he'd written called Radio Silence. And it went into the fact that why didn't the firemen in the North Tower know that there was an order to evacuate? Well, I mean, there were several hundred firemen in that North Tower, and they didn't know because their radios didn't work. And why didn't their radios work? Well, this is one of the most disheartening stories, is this man, one of the firemen, tells you, the truth about what happened. And, of course, Mayor Giuliani and the government and the 911 report and the Joint Senate Committee have totally ignored the story and, of course, this total, really criminalization of the purchase of these radios. So I'm going to let you tell the story, Mike.
Sure. Thanks, Dr. Stan. So John Joyce was in charge of tactical training. So before 9/11 and the 93 bombing, the fire department found out that their radios did not work in the towers. Now, all the different services in New York had different communication systems, and they weren't even actually able to speak with each other on their radios. In early 2001, he, as the head of the training for the fire department, his boss called him into the office and handed him some radios and said, "Would you please test these?" And they took them out to a field, which is where they do the tactical training. And he went back and told his boss that these new radios do not work.
Now, these were very expensive radios. They were Motorola. And how much did they cost?
Well, that's the $64,000 question right there. He has never been able to find out exactly how much New York City paid for these radios.
But, I mean, it was millions and millions and millions of dollars.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the radio costs were estimated by John Joyce to be between $3,000 and $8,000 per radio. The city, without doing any testing, avoiding the city's contract procurement procedures, basically, under the table, cut a deal with Motorola for over 3,000 of these new radios, purchased them, then gave a sample of the radios to John Joyce to test. When he reported back to his supervisors that the radios didn't work, he was told not to write a report. He was told to basically be quiet on it because it was a done deal. And then when they issued these radios to the field, this all happened prior to 9/11 in the year 2001. Within 3 days, a firefighter was trapped in a house fire in Queens. He called out seven Maydays. None of his men outside the house heard him. By chance, another company responding from about 2 miles away actually heard him. And when they got there, they asked the captain, the chief on the scene, did you hear the seven Maydays? Did you get the man out? He said no. The man was fortunate. They rescued him. He survived. The fire union and the firefighters put pressure on the city to recall these radios, and they recalled the radios within a week. These radios were then stuck in a warehouse, and the old radios were given back to the firefighters.
The ones that didn't work in 93.
Right, and that were already 20-year-old radios. Those are the radios they went into the towers with. And then, further, a further bizarre fact was that after 9/11, right after 9/11, Representative Carolyn Maloney, who's a Democrat in New York who represents many of these firefighters, went to the pile on the 12th and asked them, is there anything I can do for you? They said, yeah, would you get us some working radios? And the next day, there were 1,000 working Motorola radios on the pile. Now, if they had had those same working radios before 9/11, many of the firefighters would have heard the evacuation order in the North Tower. And I also show the footage of Mayor Giuliani before the 9/11 Commission testifying in New York City with the family members screaming at the mayor and at the commission, talk about Motorola, talk about the radios, talk about the contract. And what John Joyce and his co-author Bill Bowen did in this book, Radio Silence, is they went and got internal memos and documents out of Motorola. They got an engineer who worked on the radios, who was willing to testify as a whistleblower, and they got documents from the city, which showed that Motorola knew these radios didn't work. The city of New York knew these radios didn't work because John Joyce had told his supervisors, and that they were sold out for money. And they were unable to get Congress or the courts or the city of New York to do any kind of a criminal investigation or any investigation into how this contract between New York City and Motorola came into existence and what price the city paid for non-functioning radios.
And when the parents, when some of the families tried to bring a suit against Motorola, why, they were immediately told, well, you accepted a settlement from the government. You can't sue. You've lost your rights to sue. And they said, all we want to do is find out why our sons or husbands or brothers died. And they said, nothing can be done about it now. You know, just keep quiet and you've already got paid off. Yeah, they were paid off, all right. We'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here, and this was really a fascinating part of the video, and it actually this rather extensive interview with the man who had written the book on radio silence. He works for the fire department. Does he still have a job, or have they made his life miserable?
You know, actually, he's been promoted. He was a battalion captain at the time we interviewed him. He's now a battalion chief. And, you know, he and the co-author took the book out on the road to try to let firefighters around the country know about this issue because these same radios were sold by Motorola to other cities. Phoenix, I believe, Washington, D.C., the police department in Philadelphia actually had the radios pulled out of the cars, and the police officers had these radios, and they actually had issued a warning to the police officers that they must step out of their vehicle to transmit. And so about a year after this, in 2002 at some time, this model of the radio was discontinued, and yet there are cities to this day which spent between $50 and $100 million on this radio, because in order to use this Motorola radio, the XTS-3500, it required putting up a proprietary repeater system, so that once a city purchases this radio system, they are basically stuck using a Motorola radio. They can't ever go out and get competitive bids. And the contract for Homeland Security for communications is on the order of billions of dollars. So when it really comes down to it, the first responders were sold out over money. And there has never been, again, there's never been an investigation. The families were able to sue, but as you stated, they were told that they didn't have the right to sue because they took the victim's compensation money, and they appealed all the way to the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court ruled against them. Carolyn Maloney, the representative in New York, had promised these firefighters that she would hold hearings in Congress. This was back in 2004. She had said that they would call for the hearings in 2005. The hearings have never happened. And so I hope now that the Democrats are chairing these committees. Carolyn Maloney had promised when I was in New York in April at a press conference that if the Democrats were to take the chairmanships of these committees, that she would call for this investigation. So I would hope now that they have, that they would not only call for hearings on the issues of these radios, but also on the issues of the EPA lying to the citizens of New York City and telling them that the air was safe to breathe. I think these are two issues that would really bring the 9/11 topic into much wider audiences than ever before, and might be a way for us to get to having indictment.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and our guest is Mike Berger. And Mike, before we go on, I want you to tell our listeners once again the title of your video and how they can get copies of it.
Sure. The title of the film is Improbable Collapse, The Demolition of Our Republic, and you're able to order it on our website, improbablecollapse.com.
All right. Improbablecollapse.com. Do you have a telephone number where people who don't have access to a computer could call?
Actually, they can order that through the 9/11 Truth Store at MRW. They can take credit card orders, or they can call me at 314-308-4893.
One more time.
That's 314-308-4893.
All right, fine. So we'll try to get that out one more time before the hour is over. Well, if anybody's out in the listening audience would like, of course, to give us a call, our number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And we're actually talking about this video. You have one section there, just as we watch the buildings come down. What do you see as those buildings come down? Because you show them from various angles, this improbable collapse, and the reason for it is that there would be resistance. These buildings are falling at the speed of gravity. And built into these buildings, there's a certain amount of resistance. There's no way that they could have come down that rapidly unless something destroyed all the resistance in the building. The very infrastructure of the building had to be destroyed somehow or other.
Well, I mean, if the fires, for example, with the towers, unlike conventional controlled demolitions, the towers appear to have been pulverized from the top down. And I do mean pulverized because the concrete was all reduced to a very, very fine powder. And that was what was breathed in by many of the people who first responded to Ground Zero. That dust was spread all over New York and parts of Brooklyn. Now, gravity in and of itself, there is not sufficient energy to pulverize the building. And one of the main arguments for controlled demolition is, A, there isn't sufficient energy for the building to pulverize itself. I mean, it's one thing if the floors, you know, one of the original theories put out by the government was this notion of a pancake theory, that as a floor would fail, that floor would hit the next floor and then the next floor, and they would pancake down. What that doesn't account for is that as those floors pancake, there would be resistance, which would slow the collapse. So the collapse would have to take longer than it would in free fall, and the buildings collapsed at virtually free fall speed. The other issue is the amount of energy required to pulverize the building, and as you look at the images of the buildings coming down, what you see are these enormous clouds of dust beginning at the very, very top of the buildings as the buildings begin to collapse. And at the very top is where there would be the least amount of speed. So it would be very difficult to account for the energy required to pulverize the tops of these buildings. And then the symmetry of the speed, people point out that the squibs, and again,
could you explain to our listeners what those squibs are? Because I think that is really one of the most significant things. You can actually see these puffs of smoke coming out of the buildings below the level of the collapse.
Right. Sometimes 20 and 30, maybe 40 stories below where the collapse is coming down, you see jets of air shooting out of the building, puffs of material flying out of the building at much lower levels. And the collapse of these buildings represent, they have all the defining characteristics of controlled demolitions, especially Building 7. And again, the molten metal seen at the site, described by many people, and the pictures of molten steel in the hot spots taken from satellite imagery can't be accounted for simply by jet fuel fires and office materials, carpeting and desks, etc. those fires can't get hot enough to melt steel. So there had to be some additional sources of energy that would have been responsible for melting steel and for creating these enormous pools of heated molten metal on the site. And the molten metal is never mentioned or accounted for in any of the government reports, and the 9/11 Commission report never even mentions Building 7.
And, of course, really what's interesting, I don't know if you know William Rodriguez's story, but William Rodriguez was working in the North Tower on the day of the attack, and he was down on the top floor of the basement talking to his supervisor, and when all of a sudden there's a massive explosion in the basement of the building. And, of course, a couple of seconds later, then the plane hit the top of the building. But he was almost thrown off his feet by the explosion in the basement of the building. There was a Mr. Felipe David who was down on one of the lower floors. And, of course, this fiery blast just consumes him. He runs upstairs and Rodriguez gets him out of the building. But there was a massive explosion in the basement of the building before Flight 11 hit the top. And the same thing happened in the South Tower. Now, William Rodriguez testified before the 911 Commission, but they wouldn't allow him to testify in public, and then they sealed his testimony for 50 years so the public would never know what he said. And, of course, William Rodriguez was one of these people who started getting threatening telephone calls, and they would break into his home, and they would destroy his material, always letting him know they were watching him in an attempt to intimidate him. That's a standard operating procedure. It happened to so many of the people I have interviewed who were there who were challenging the official government position. Why would Osama bin Laden be doing that? Or maybe it isn't Osama bin Laden. Maybe it's somebody else, you know, who has to cover up the truth about what happened that day because somebody's responsible for killing 3,000 Americans. And not only that, but 1,100 of the bodies have never been recovered. And the question is, were they crushed when the buildings collapsed, or were they vaporized when the buildings exploded?
Well, and you know, we should also mention the oral histories of the firefighters, which, I mean, many people would say, well, if that's the case, then wouldn't there have been eyewitnesses who would have seen these in addition to William Rodriguez? What about the firefighters? And in fact, another part of the cover-up was that New York City spoke with and interviewed many of the first responders, the EMS people, the firefighters, etc., and they would not make those oral histories public. It took the New York Times to sue, and when we finally got access to the oral histories, not only did we find many of the eyewitness testimony confirmed that they heard explosions, that they witnessed and saw explosions. You can hear recordings from some of the radio traffic of people expressing, you know, there were multiple secondary explosions, people injured by them, where do I take them, etc. But the other interesting thing is we still don't really have all of those oral histories because what was released was redacted. So there are still points in those oral histories that we really don't know what these firefighters were saying, because you can read, you know, before and after the redactions where the interviewer is saying, is there anything else? And the firefighter says something, and then afterwards the interviewer says, oh, that's very interesting. But we don't know what was very interesting.
And the question is, why are they concealing that from the American people? I mean, all this is classified. Why are they classifying the information? Are they trying to keep Osama bin Laden from learning what happened that day?
Yeah,
and are they trying to keep the American people from learning? There were 1,200 people who testified in secret before the 911 Commission, and the testimony of 1,100 of the 1,200 was sealed for 50 years and is secret. We'll never know what they said. Why, if there's nothing to conceal, why are they concealing it? 3,000 Americans are dead. Why can't the public know what happened?
You know, Dr. Stan, of all of that testimony that has been sealed, the testimony that makes the least sense, because it can't be described as a threat to national security, are the oral histories of the firefighters. There really isn't any justification. The original argument why the Bloomberg administration wouldn't release it was because they felt that the family members would be upset by it. So once the New York Times sued, there was no reason for redactions. And again, nothing in those oral histories can be considered or declared a threat to national security.
Well, but it really could, Mike, because if it should possibly be the impossible idea that maybe there was somebody, and I'm not suggesting President Bush knew anything about it, but somebody else in our government that wanted to get us into a war in the Middle East and of course into a war with Iran and Syria and Iraq and Afghanistan, you had to have an incident that would get us into the war. And if somebody's responsible, they'd have to cover that up. They couldn't allow the American people to know the truth, could they?
Nope, they sure can't. I mean, that speaks as well to Sybil Edmonds, who was gagged, and so was the Congress by John Ashcroft, so they couldn't speak about her closed-door testimony. And to this day, she's held her silence. You know, I would hope that we would be able to make it possible for many of the national security whistleblowers and other people who have been silenced, the people who were on the site at 9/11 and afterwards at Ground Zero, that we could possibly get them immunity so they could come forward and tell their story without fear of retribution, because we need to make it safe for these people to tell their story.
Well, you know, we could use the analogy of the Gulf of Tonkin incident during the Vietnam War. It didn't occur, and of course there was a great deal of evidence tapes from the White House that certainly a naval officer was flying over the Gulf of Tonkin that day. And I think most people, the Pentagon Papers agree, that the Gulf of Tonkin incident was a fraud. Somebody in government lied to us about it, and 58,000 American boys died because we were taken into a war in Vietnam that was unnecessary. A million South Vietnamese died. 2 million North Vietnamese died. And nobody has ever been held responsible. And I think that we could fast forward to 9/11. They wanted to get us into a war in the Middle East. The plans were already there. They needed an incident. They said they needed an incident. They got an incident. I think the American people deserve, and I think the families of the people who died, and we dishonor the people who died that day if we do not get to the truth of what really happened on 9/11, which is why I think your video is very important.
Well, thank you. We have to keep plugging away. And the other issue that we address as well is the media. The fact that, you know, there's still half the country isn't even aware of the collapse of Building 7. And that is simply because the media will not play Building 7. Nobody discusses it. Nobody shows it. And when I've had the opportunity to appear in the media, after my first appearances, I decided that I would ask if they would play Building 7 as a condition for going on national television. And the first media outlet, MSNBC, that I asked, this was the same outlet that Professor Jones was asked on a year earlier to Tucker Carlson's show, and they asked Professor Jones what he wanted to show. He sent them the clip of Building 7, and then they didn't show it when he was on the air. They had set him up. So when I was asked to go on Scarborough Country, which is on the same network, I had asked them if they would guarantee that they would show the clip of Building 7, and the booking agent called me back the next day and said that she had gotten approval from the vice president of programming at NBC. So it's not even up to these individual shows whether or not they can show it. It literally goes to the very upper echelons of the networks. And then this was further confirmed for me when Headline News, the Glenn Beck show, had asked me to go on, and I asked them, I said, you know, well, Scarborough Country showed Building 7. Will you show the clip? And when the person went and asked for permission and called me back, she had said that CNN had a policy of not showing collapsing buildings.
And talk about hypocrisy.
That was my exact response. I thought she was joking. And I said, you're joking, right? And she said, no, Mr. Berger, why would I joke with you? And I said, well, because you show the towers over and over again. Why won't you show Building 7? People have a right to see this. And she said, well, it's our policy here. And I said, well, who made this policy? And I would assume then that means for the upcoming fifth anniversary, you're not going to be showing the towers over and over again, obviously, if this is your policy. And I contacted their public relations person for CNN to ask them for the statement of this policy. And the PR person told me, you know, she had no idea what I was talking about. She'd have to look into it. And when she sent me back an email, I got a two-sentence email that said, this is what CNN is putting forward. Those were her words, basically, that CNN decides on a case-by-case basis what footage from September 11th they will show, but it is not the official policy of CNN to not show collapsing buildings.
Well, I think that there is a conscious, intentional cover-up. I mean, you could, for instance, you will never see pictures on television of an aborted child in the arms and legs and head, and you know, they just refuse to show pictures. But right now, the issue is Building 7. I think every American needs to see Building 7 come down.
Well, you know, it's the same. Your point is right on. It's the same with the soldiers returning from the war in body bags. In the Vietnam War, that was part of what really got Americans to stand up to end the war. But the Pentagon has now made it impossible for anybody to photograph anything at Dover when the bodies come off the planes. And in the same way, you know, the media, there are many people who still believe that we really do have a free media. And at least my own experience, my own little bit of experience in the media shows that much of it really is controlled at the very top of these networks. It was not some individual producer or host at one of these shows who refused to show this. They literally had to get approval at the top, and they couldn't. I think it was kind of an anomaly that Scarborough Country showed the clip, but then again, if you look at it, and I did include it in the film, what was really significant there, I thought, was that the clip they showed was shot by their own network cameras, and somehow the clip that they aired during the show was all blurry and fuzzy, but the clip that I have in the film is clearer than the one the network themselves shot and aired.
Well, I think that there's a conscious, organized, orchestrated effort to try to prevent the American people from thinking. The implications of what really happened are so horrible. Well, some people say the American people couldn't accept the truth. Ladies and gentlemen, we have to accept the truth. We have to determine the truth. What really happened that day? What happened to the 11 bodies, 1,100 bodies that simply have never been found? I believe that they were vaporized. How could they be vaporized if the building collapsed? Check out what we're saying. Find out if it could be true. Mike, let's get your telephone number and your website out one more time.
Sure. The website is improbablecollapse.com.
Improbablecollapse.com.
And the phone number is 314-308-4893. Or to order by credit card, you can also call 888-884-8355.
Hold that thought. Well, Mike, you've got 3 minutes to wrap up today's program.
Well, I would also like to show that part of the urgings for doing the film was to also connect it with the demolition of our republic, in that the events of September 11th have been utilized by the administration to manipulate the American people through fear and intimidation to willingly give up our constitutional rights, our civil liberties, and the American people would have never tolerated the passage of the Patriot Act, the Military Commissions Act, Help America Vote Act, the Real ID Act, the Mental Health Act. One act after another passed by Congress has torn apart the rights that we fought for and that the country supposedly stands for. If we stand out to the world as a beacon of freedom and hope, then the last thing we should be asked to do is to sacrifice those freedoms. And if we, as we were told by the president on the evening of 9/11, were attacked because we are free, then you would think the first thing we would do is defend the very freedom that we were attacked for. But of course, we weren't attacked because we were free. So the argument that, and the argument that has been made by the government is that 9/11 has been the justification for everything to change. And so the reason I made the film was to point out that if the facts, if the scientific and physical facts bring into question and contradict the official story about what happened in New York, as you said earlier in the show, then the whole story begins to crumble and fall apart, and it means that we are being sold lie after lie, and that it is our duty as American citizens and real patriots to stand up, to question, and to push for a real investigation that leads to indictments, because not a single person has ever been held accountable. No one from Motorola was held accountable for making and selling radios that they knew didn't work. And this pattern was repeated throughout our entire government, throughout the entire chain of command on 9/11. Nobody fulfilled their duties that morning, and no one was held accountable. In fact, most of the people who failed to discharge their duties that morning, they were promoted and rewarded for their failure.
We have to ask ourselves why. We're just about out of time, Mike. Thank you so very much for being with us, and I would love to get you onto our other programs. You're very articulate. It's been a real pleasure to have you with us.
Same here. Thank you very much, Dr. Stan. I really appreciate spending time with you and your listeners.
God bless you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Okay, fine. That was Mike Berger. Well, this is Dr. Stan. What happened on 9/11 was a watershed event for America. Subsequent to the 9/11 attack, the administration got through a lot of legislation that the Clinton administration had tried to get through and couldn't after the attack on the Murrah Building in Oklahoma City. This had nothing to do with 9/11. It had everything to do with taking away our freedom. For instance, did you know that your cell phone, even when you have it turned off, has a little microphone in it so they can listen to what you're saying? That's been there for a long time. We're moving towards 1984. Did you know your telephone, even though it's hung up, they can listen to what you're saying? They have the ability. All of these things are built in. Why do you think they're putting the videos out every place? So we can apprehend Osama bin Laden? Is this why they're putting them on the highways and on the street corners all across America? Is this why we're building detention camps across America, where we gave Halliburton $385 million to build detention camps, and we put out $38 million recently to refurbish those Japanese concentration camps that were used in 1941 and 1942, because we never want anyone to forget how terrible it was to put people in concentration camps. We have to understand what happened on 9/11. First of all, go to my website of RadioLiberty.com and pull down my newsletters. August, September, October, November. Read them, reread them, copy them, and distribute them. Our December newsletter will be out. That'll end the series. Then get the 5 videos we have. We carry 9/11 Press for the Truth, the story of the Jersey girls, the 4 widows who lost their husbands, and their effort to find out what really happened. And then, of course, 9/11 Mysteries. Terror Storm by Alex Jones. Fascinating material. In Plain Sight and The Day That Changed America Forever. All of those DVDs are available from Radio Liberty. You can get them as the 9/11 special, or you can get them separately. But get them and watch them. And if you can't afford to, get on the Internet and simply Google in Building 7... video, Building 7 video, and you can actually watch Building 7 come down from a half a dozen angles, and you will see, as I eventually convinced myself, a controlled demolition. And if it was a controlled demolition, then everything we've been told is a lie. The other thing is, of course, that they had military exercises on 9/11 that just happened to simulate the terrorists hijacking a plane and crashing it into a building. What a coincidence. Oh, Osama bin Laden's got to be awfully smart to have arranged the attack on America the very day we were having military exercises that served to confuse the military and the FAA and everybody else. And you'll want to read my newsletters where we go into the background and give you the documentation for what we say. Freedom is lost when good people don't do anything. Most people would like to believe that we live in an ideal society. I wish we did. But we live in an evil society. There are forces of evil out there. And there's this conflict between Christianity and the forces of darkness. That same battle has been going on since the Garden of Eden. You need to get my book, Brotherhood of Darkness. You need to get my pamphlets, The Occult Conspiracy. They're three little pamphlets, compilations of newsletters. All of the things we've talked about are available by calling 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. And then of course, we ask you to pray for America, to pray for revival, to pray for our leaders, to pray for our ministers. But please pray for my ministry of Radio Liberty, for our provision and protection. We're on the front lines of this truly spiritual battle for the souls of men and the survival of Christian civilization. And I do hope that many of our listeners, if they take heed to what we're saying, if they begin to recognize the organized evil that permeates every aspect of society today, that they begin looking for the solution. And the solution is to, first of all, accept Jesus Christ as your Lord, because that's the only thing that's going to see you through what I believe are the very, very difficult times that lie ahead. So please pray for America. Pray for revival. And till tomorrow, may the Lord be with you.
You're listening to the Global Star Radio Network, located at Telstar 5 KU band, frequency 11836, symbol rate 20770. Thank you for listening.
News on the Information Radio Network. I'm John Russell. President Bush has been defending his plan for an Iraq troop buildup on a visit to an army base in Georgia.
At a base where soldiers are getting an early call to return to Iraq, the president said he's convinced his plan is America's best chance for success there. But he adds it won't halt the violence overnight.
It's going to take a while. The American people have got to understand that suicide bombings won't stop immediately. The IED attacks won't stop immediately. Yet over time, we can expect to see positive results.
Bush says he's heartened by the bravery Iraqi troops have shown in recent days and by the resolve of Iraqi leaders to shut down sectarian militias.
A Mississippi jury has awarded more than $2.5 million.